morning. Welcome to Husky Nation News right here on WHUS Stores 91.7 FM. This broadcast is in collaboration with the UConn newspaper, the Daily Campus, and UConn student-run TV station, UCTV. I am your host, Grace McFadden, and here's the news from the University of Connecticut this week. The undergraduate student government finished elections yesterday, with results anticipated this weekend. Over 30 Senate seats were up for election. These Senate seats are categorized as residential, academic, or multicultural slash diversity. More information about voting and the elections can be found at usg.ucon.edu. Residents of the East Campus dorms are petitioning for clean water, reports the Daily Campus's Jake Kelly. Residents of East complain that only 3 of the 5 buildings have water bottle filling stations. Residents also maintain that the filters in the existing water bottle filling stations are not well maintained, leading residents to have dirty water. The petition is organized by Sprague Hall resident Luke Villani, a 9th semester history and anthropology double major, Rob Foley, a 7th semester mechanical engineering major, and Dan Campbell, a 7th semester accounting major. UConn is standing with the state's declaration of racism as a public health crisis. However, USG and other students are still looking for more, reports the Daily Campus's Isa Shaikh. The official declaration of racism as a public health crisis is one of the 3 demands being brought to the table on October 6th at the Rally for a Peaceful Planet. Other collaborators for this event include UConn Collaborative Organizing, Praxis, UConn Human Rights Symposium, Power Up UConn, Sunrise CT, and Fridays for Future. UConn received $357.6 million in research funding for the 2020-2021 school year, reported the Daily Campus's Amanda McCard. This surpassed research funding from the prior year, which totaled $285.8 million. Dr. Kumar Venkatkarayanan, the Associate Dean of Research and Graduate Education at the College of Agriculture, Health, and Natural Resources, said UConn has about a 40% success rate with having proposals funded. At this time, UConn is mandating vaccines for all staff and faculty of the university. WHUS News correspondent Selena Daigle has more on this story.
As UConn attempts to bring campus back to life this fall 2021 semester, vaccinations and masks have become a requirement for all students and staff to help fight the spread of COVID-19. Dr. Agwanabi, current interim president and chief executive officer and executive vice president of UConn Health, announced the week of August 15, 2021, that a mandate would be put in place for all currently active and new employees, as well as volunteers or any individual who is contracted with the University of Connecticut. The policy will coincide at all UConn campuses. According to Human Resources, the requirement for vaccines will be in effect for all, regardless of in-person or remote work status, state of residency, and their payroll status. There are, of course, exemptions due to personal or specific circumstances, medical and religious exemptions, receiving recent positive COVID-19 test results or treatment, and/or are currently breastfeeding or pregnant. The purpose of the mandate is to ensure that all students, faculty, staff, and community members are situated in a healthy environment, protected from the virus. If an individual chooses to apply for exemption from the vaccine and is denied, they have 10 days from the instance of denial to receive either the first dose of a 2-dose series vaccine or the singular dose option. By September 10, 2021, however, each staff member who does not qualify for an exemption to the mandate is required to have at least 1 dose of a COVID-19 vaccine. Their second dose must be administered by October 15, 2021, to be compliant with the university policy. If an individual resides in a country abroad, they must have at least 1 dose of a vaccine from their country of origin by the above date. However, they do not have to have received exclusively Pfizer, Moderna, or Johnson & Johnson, the vaccine produced by Johnson Pharmaceuticals companies of Johnson & Johnson. Failure to comply with or violations to the mandate may result in applicable disciplinary actions, with the heaviest of the consequences being dismissal from employment within the university. German Studies Associate Professor Sebastian Wojenstein believes that the mandate is a great addition this semester.
I think it's important for people to be vaccinated, and I think the mandate is a good thing.
I think most of the concerns are ill-advised.
Not only did Professor Wojenstein state that it was important for staff to be vaccinated, but students as well. As a father of two young children, it becomes a concern being surrounded by so many individuals within a classroom setting each day, since his children cannot yet be vaccinated. All in all, both UConn staff as well as students are working together to achieve the goal of normalcy sometime in the future, where masks and concerns for health are not a problem on all campuses. From WHUS News, I'm Selena Daigle.
UConn women's hockey team completed a series sweep against Long Island University. UCTV's Eric Santangelo has more.
The UConn women's hockey team looks to start their season strong and repeat its success against the Long Island University Sharks with its second win in as many days. After a game in which UConn dominated the shots on goal, LIU would not let that happen again. In the first period, each team had their opportunities, including power plays for both sides. While on the power play, UConn generated a few good shots against freshman goalie Tindra Holm, but she was able to shut them down. On the defensive end, Husky defenders Alexandra Ann Boyer and Chloe Gonzalez made their presences felt, stopping LIU on breakaway opportunities and on the power play. It was scoreless after one period, with both teams playing well defensively. The second period was a different story than the first. UConn turned up the offensive pressure right from the start with seven shots in the first 5 minutes of the period. However, strong play by Holm continued to keep the puck out of the net. The Huskies would continue to control the tempo, led by captain Natalie Snodgrass, who's in the mix offensively and defensively. With around 2 minutes left in the period, Snodgrass gave the Huskies the lead with their first goal of the season.
But their goalie stood tall, and you know, we were able to, Natalie Snodgrass really led the way here and really just was able to get the one for us, which was big.
In the third period, the Huskies maintained control of the puck. Snodgrass continued to apply pressure on the LIU defense, and the Sharks weren't able to generate many offensive opportunities. Freshman goalie Megan Warner, in her first collegiate start, played a large role in the Huskies' defensive success, finishing with 20 saves and her first career shutout. Corinne Tormala was able to put the puck in the net to give the Huskies the lead for good, after deflecting a Gonzalez shot for her first goal of the season. From then on, the Huskies were able to control the game defensively and put away the Sharks 2-0. The Huskies will look to continue their strong start to the season as they go on the road to face the RIT Tigers Friday, October the 8th. From Mark Edwards Freitas Ice Forum, I'm Eric Santangelo, UCTV Sports.
The university is using a color-coded system for this semester for COVID-19. Currently, the store's campus is at a code orange, meaning masks are required indoors and recommended outdoors. This aligns with Mansfield's indoor mask mandate, which has been in place since August. 98% of Storrs residential students are fully or partially vaccinated against COVID, up from 97% 2 weeks ago. Currently, there are 5 positive residential cases at Storrs, bringing the total number of cases to 23 for the school year thus far. The positivity rate for UConn Storrs residential students is 0.05%. So far, there have been 29 reported cases among faculty and staff. Today will be sunny with a high near 63. Tonight will be clear with lows dropping down to 46. Tomorrow there may be some patchy fog in the morning before clearing up to be sunny for the rest of the day. The high will be around 71. The low tomorrow night will be around 54. There's a 20% chance of precipitation on Sunday. The high will reach 74 before dropping down to a low of around 57 on Sunday night. Precipitation is likely Sunday night. Stick around, we'll be right back with more Husky Nation news.
Welcome to Husky Nation News.
We've got the University of Connecticut's Need to Know News.
We'll now be moving into the talk portion of our news show.
I was like, I want to start a newspaper, and so I did.
She's like, you're Egyptian, like your mummies, and I'm like,
really focused on comfort of the patient.
I am originally from Northern Ireland, which is a country.
How many pop tarts?
Bienvenidos a nuestro.
Like, if you were to go,
and you are listening to WHUS Storrs 91.7 FM.
From this point forward, the views and opinions expressed on this WHUS News Department show are those of the hosts and guests, and are not necessarily the views of the staff, management, or licensee of WHUS Radio or the University of Connecticut. All right, welcome back to Husky Nation News. My guest is Lauren Rodriguez, currently a school administrator with Mansfield Public Schools, and next year she will become the principal of the new Mansfield Elementary School. Thank you for coming on, Lauren.
Thank you so much for having me, Grace.
All right, perfect. So what is your current position and how long have you been there?
I'm currently the elementary school principal at Southeast Elementary School, and I started here in 2013. That was my first year. Sometimes people remember that I was also an administrative intern, so I actually had a year while I was working with going through school at the University of Connecticut. I had signed up for the principal preparation program, which they call UCAP. And I had a year where I was working as an intern to the former principal, Norma Fisher Doran. So while I started in 2013, I first had exposure to the school back in 2006.
All right.
I loved it.
Yeah. Wow. So it's been a long time at this elementary school. How did you decide to go into education just as a field?
Oh, wow. I knew when I was very young that working with children was exciting for me and fun, and I knew that I was making connections with kids. So I did things like even high school, daycare, camp counselor. I had taught swimming lessons to children, and it was always more towards very young elementary age students. And I really enjoyed it. And then when I had the chance to start and decide what did I want to do for school and what was my career going to be, it seemed like the natural fit. I also was an umpire and worked in sports, so I was hopeful at that point there might be a time for me to do some coaching while I was also having, you know, the job as an elementary school teacher. And, you know, the experiences have just been exciting throughout, you know, getting to know different families and children. So it's just continues to motivate me.
Great, cool. So did you start as an elementary school teacher and then move to the administrative side?
I did. Yeah. Yeah. I was a teacher in New Jersey, in Bridgewater, New Jersey, which was fantastic experience. I started as a second grade teacher and enjoyed my time. I filled in for a maternity leave position and really looked up to the teacher who I took over for. And then a position opened up that same year once she came back, and I became a fourth grade teacher. And then soon after that, I became what they call a looping teacher. So I taught the same group of students in fourth grade that I did in fifth grade. So I had them for 2 years. And, you know, even to this day, I'm still very much in touch with those families. You just become close when you see them through so much, you know, so much life together. And many of the families just very supportive in that area of education and of their children. So just super involved in their children's work.
I never knew that there was a word for that. I have never heard the term looping teacher. So that is good thing to learn, good thing to know. All right, thank you.
I also, my last year after looping, I did 1 year as a gifted and talented teacher, and that was teaching fifth grade. I had just recently gotten a degree through UConn and took over that position, and that was awesome too. But I had decided that was planning to move back up to UConn to go back for more schooling. So I only had that position for 1 year before I resigned to move back up to UConn.
Right. So when you went back to UConn, what like degree were you trying to get? What kind of schooling were you kind of trying to acquire?
At that point, I was interested, worked with Dr. Sally Reese, and she was in the educational psychology department, and was focused on looking at developing programs, teacher trainings for reading programs. So I was really excited about that. Had first taken the first step to come up for my doctorate degree, and had a really pivotal moment with Dr. Reese when we were walking, and she I had just moved up here. We were talking things through, and she was really excited about my future and university level for the rest of my life, you know, and it wasn't how I saw myself. We sort of had this moment where I thought, oh my goodness, I'm not sure I really want to be in administration. I don't want to be in higher ed at that point. So it was a moment where I really felt like, I think, you know, I was able to kind of clarify what I was looking to do. And it really set up, you know, what I've been doing ever since. Sally was a pivotal person to really help me to identify what my next steps were in my career.
Very cool. So going into your career as an administrator, obviously you had to work as a school administrator during COVID. What was that like? What were the challenges that you kind of experienced in that sense?
Wow. It's been... it's been eye-opening in so many levels. The responsibility that we have to continue education for our students. You know, when we initially did our shutdown in March of that year, we had named a 10-day, I think it was 10 days, if I remember right, snow days that we were going to have. And we were going to use that time to really start pulling together what the planning would look like. And I'm grateful for that. I think everything that Mansfield has done from day one has been just trying to be thoughtful to our students and our families. We've seen some awesome district work come out, things like what we call CARES teams, where you know, families can reach out. Here at Southeast, we had a food bank that we had set up for families in need. And more than we've ever really done as partners with families in financial or food need. Mm-hmm. And I have enjoyed that. I think that the fact that we can give back to the community, the fact that the community trusts us enough to say I need help and knows that they can get whatever it is they might need, that we're gonna do everything that we can for their children first, but it's their families too. So we've seen you know, families have been appreciative, but we really recognize the role that we play in helping to keep families healthy and safe. We, as a district, I feel like we've really jumped into those opportunities that maybe before the pandemic, we might not have done as much, maybe because we didn't realize there was as much need. But once it became so public and open for us to say, you know, there's a need, I think that it just opened up doors for families to be honest about their struggles.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. So for those who may not have children in Mansfield Elementary Schools, what does the format of learning in the Mansfield Elementary Schools look like right now? Are any of the students remote? Are you all masking? What are those policies looking like?
Yeah, so there's a big push and continuation of support for social emotional learning. Mm-hmm. So I know here at Southeast and across the district, when students come in, free food is provided so children can get breakfast as soon as they come in. And then as they go to their classrooms, they're learning about skills that are going to be necessary for them to practice, you know, even things as basic as learning to play with one another. You know, we've seen that there has been a decline in students' abilities because those opportunities were restricted. Families weren't taking their children to the playgrounds, for example, because of fear of COVID and the reality of COVID. But I think now, you know, the focus on social emotional learning, it's what we use to start our day. Students do have we have a series of mitigation strategies that we use to keep kids safe, and mm-hmm. Mansfield did a fantastic job of that last year. We have very few COVID cases throughout the district, especially when you look regionally in comparison to other towns. Mm-hmm. But we have students wear masks all the way down to preschool, and they're fabulous with it. I think we thought that it would be more difficult than it was for them. The harder part is trying to keep them at a distance when they're learning, and the, you know, they're mandate right now is for 3 feet in Mansfield. So we work hard to try to have them play together, but not so close together. They're on top of each other. And then there's hand washing routines that we use anytime they get ready to eat, or obviously after they use the bathroom, but it's something that we focus in on. And then there's a number of different ways that we're just trying to keep everyone safe. One of those is called cohorting. So that's kind of a word we wouldn't have used in the way that it is now after COVID, but or during COVID. But cohorting for us this year means that one grade level can play together. So that helps us for contact tracing. So we would know where to go and who to look at, you know, for COVID exposure if there was any trouble.
It's really interesting. I feel like the social emotional learning aspect and the kind of repairing you're doing there is like something I would have not even thought about, but it totally makes sense. So looking forward a little bit, next year you will be the principal of the Consolidated Elementary Schools. So do you have any plans for that? Are there any like overarching goals that will guide your time as principal there?
Yeah, as the I'm very excited about the new opportunity. One of the things that I think most people have heard, but this is going to be a net zero school. And the excitement of having a responsible school is just such a core as to who I am, we and who the district is. So it's surprising that this isn't something that, you know, every school is, you know, it's like you're we're making a statement here, and it's the right work. So that's first and foremost is being responsible stewards to the environment, mm-hmm. having students understand how the building works by the various metrics that the building will produce in the design. This place is gorgeous. I don't know if you've seen pictures, Grace, but the setup of it, it's extremely thoughtful to and age appropriate for the children. Each grade level will have a pod where they learn. There'll be flexible spacing for them to be able to learn in the classroom, but also in flexible spacing in the hallway to encourage more group work. Mm-hmm. We also have common planning spaces for teachers that look a little different than what we've had before to encourage. That's one of the newer parts about this. Mansfield has great history and track record of being successful in education. But as we look to bring all of our teachers together, it's developing new relationships and forming new ideas and, you know, really supporting the children and their interests and their, along with what we're teaching. So mm-hmm. I think that the first goal that I'm working on right now is meeting with individual teachers and having a chance to get to know them. And we also are, we'll have time to start working together just next month as grade level teams, mm-hmm. so that we can start deciding exactly what we're going to be, you know, teaching. And then soon after that, we're going to have opportunities for students to come together across schools. There's a interesting beam signing event that the district is going to put on. So the children from every school in the district will come to sign their name, and they're hoping to have that beam put up in the new building in a prominent place so the kids mm-hmm. can see, like, this was, you know, something I had my hands on. Mm-hmm. And then some collaborative events that we're looking to have. And then getting to know the parents, you know, I think that for all families, that the building trust in the elementary school is so core and key. The, you know, these parents send their babies to us, and, you know, the trust is the most important thing. So I would say that's a lot of what I'm thinking about right now and trying to build a culture around. So yeah, it's exciting work.
Very excited. It's so cool to be able to see the net zero elementary school thing play out, because at least for me, I don't think I've seen anything like that really anywhere else that I've lived. So very cool to see. So that's about all I have for you. I really appreciate you coming on today. Thank you for being here. You did a great job.
Thank you so much, Grace. Yeah. And, you know, if anyone wants to reach out and have questions about the new school, I'm happy to have people reach out.
Thank you all for listening this morning. And thanks to our news partners, the Daily Campus, UConn Student Newspaper, and UCTV, UConn Student Television Station. And a special thank you to Ethan Smith, the creator of our theme music. I am Grace McFadden. You have been listening to Husky Nation News on WHUS Stores 91.7 FM. Catch you next week, Husky Nation.